Welcome to Carly Gousset, The Truth Lies in Between. It's a podcast about a missing teen from California. It discusses the truth, the lies, and of course, everything in between. My name is Derek, people call me D, and I'm your host. This podcast is brought to you by Missing Person Cases Network. You can find us on Facebook, where we have a page. Many groups, including one for Carly, is actually called Carly Gousset, Missing from California. Most of our groups have the acronym MPCN in it, but this one does not, and it is now over 5,000 members, so I cannot add it. You can also look up our true crime page, True Crime MPCN. You can also find us on Instagram at missing_persons_network or on Twitter at the_MPC network. There is also a subreddit for us and for Carly as well. You can search Carly Gousset on Reddit, and there's a subreddit that we control. We are, of course, on YouTube at Missing Person Cases Network. And when I say us, I truly mean us, as a team effort. And if it wasn't for all the girls behind me, behind the scenes, then there would be no Missing Person Cases Network. So first, I'd like to apologize about the last two mediocre at best episodes I've put out of this podcast. I was trying to do too many things. I was making too many different types of videos. I was just spread out too thin, and I wasn't concentrating on this podcast, and it showed with the final product. I guarantee you that this episode will meet your expectations and the rest will exceed it. I sure as heck hope that I can finally meet my own expectations. I'm actually very disappointed that I even allowed myself to publish such average to below average content. You know, I've never been an average person. Unlike some other people involved with this case, who will remain nameless at the moment, have accomplished some things in my life. I've graduated from a top business school with a 3.8 GPA. I worked on Wall Street. But the most you have accomplished is smoking two packs of cigarettes before noon. Which is an accomplishment, I must say, because that's awfully difficult to do. But it shows in your voice, which we will hear shortly. I do understand that college does not determine one's success level or accomplishments in life at all. I am one of the people opposed to the way we pushed college in America so much. I believe we should be doing more towards trade schools. But that has nothing to do with what I'm saying. Many billionaires didn't even graduate from college, such as Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg. But not only did you not attend college, no trade school, no job, no career, no nothing. But somehow, you managed to, what is the word I'm looking for here, discredit a man with many years of actual investigative experience as a homicide detective and a licensed PI and another PI who has worked missing persons cases for decades. It is just mind-boggling. I'm just going to play a little clip which is going to just be a little sneak peek into episode 5, which I have titled PI versus Troll: Social Media's Negative Impact on This Case. You guys won't want to miss that one. Here's a little clip.
Okay, I've talked to Jess, and that's the one he's spilling this entire conversation on. It's also the same conversation that covers him believing that Kane is the number one suspect. So we can show a history of the original comment that Boone made on the missing persons cases post about our policy not allowing theory on Lindsay and Kane, how this whole thing started. And then we're going to have about 100 screenshots of this whole conversation between him and Jess. We'll post it as is, where is, where Boone has completely spilled it. And then we're covered because we're just doing fair reporting. We're not doxing the guy. And it's going to show his character on committing time like this, attempting to bully us for cyber terrorism and all this stuff, all over him being butthurt about our position not to have theories that's harmful to the family.
All right, guys, you heard it yourself. Right there. I mean, you'll find out next week what that's all about. I think some of you may know. Same person who was arguing with AD over a picture. So we'll see. So now let's get into this episode. Okay. You guys aren't going to want to miss next episode, but this is a good one too. I'm going to play the Nancy Grace podcast, but it's going to be the first part. Okay, of Zach and Melissa's interview. Okay, listen close. I will be going back to some audio when I discuss it, but I need you guys to listen close. Okay, some of the most important information regarding this case is right here. This is it. This is the meat and potatoes of the case, guys. Listen yourself, okay?
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
They're searching for a 16-year-old girl missing in Mono County, east of Yosemite National Park. Carly Goosey was last seen early Saturday morning in Chalfont, about 14 miles north of Bishop. Authorities say she doesn't have her cell phone or any personal belongings with her and may be disoriented. Police dogs and helicopters have been assisting in the search, but as of last night, they've not been able to locate her. Carly described to be 5'7", 110 pounds, with dark blonde hair and blue eyes.
Where is Carly Goosey? Tip line 760-932-7549. This is Crime Stories. I'm Nancy Grace. We are trying to find answers in the disappearance of a gorgeous young girl, Carly Goosey. We know that investigators have searched nearby neighborhoods and the desert terrain using helicopters and scent dogs. They have not found any clue. Listen.
She's 5'7", about 115 pounds. She has blue eyes and the cutest little nose and a great smile. And her hair goes all the way down past her, like, to her belly, let's say, mid-waist, and she left in her jeans and a t-shirt, so I'm putting it out there, and just go for it. Everybody help me out here. I love you all. Everybody please watch, share your friends, share my friends, share everybody's, just share the shit out of it, all right? Thank you.
You are hearing the stepmother of missing Carly Goosey. That is Melissa Goosey begging for help. Carly is missing. And joining me right now is that stepmom, Melissa Goosey, and the bio dad of Carly Goosey, Zachary Goosey. Zachary and Melissa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Melissa, my first question is this. I understand that you last saw Carly in bed with you at around 5:30 a.m. Is that right?
Around 5:45, yes.
Okay. I've gotten 5:30 and I've gotten 6:30, but now you're clarifying it's 5:45. Now, in your Facebook Live, you said that she was wearing jeans, I think.
Yeah, I only said that because she always wears her skinny jeans. So I just assumed that she had her skinny jeans on.
Would she have worn blue jeans to bed?
I had picked her up and she had her skinny jeans on.
I know, but I mean, when you were in bed with her at 5:45 a.m., did she still have on her jeans?
No.
Okay, so...
she had a t-shirt and just her underwear.
Okay, let me understand. Because in the Facebook Live, I'm trying to get the description of what she had on the last time you saw her out there. So in the Facebook...
the last time I saw her in our home... she only had a t-shirt and her undergarment.
Okay. Then that Facebook Live that she blasted out saying, look for her in the skinny jeans. What are we supposed to do with that? That's not right.
I was in a panic. And she's not one to go out of the house in sweatpants or anything but her skinny jeans.
Okay. All right, so the last time you saw her, she was not wearing what was on the Facebook Live. She was wearing a t-shirt and undies. All right, question. Were her PJs, the t-shirt, was the t-shirt found in the home after she disappeared?
No.
Okay. What was on the t-shirt? What was it?
From what I can remember, it was like a Vans t-shirt or... some kind of t-shirt that had a logo on the back and then the small one over, like, where your heart is.
Got you. Was it white, blue? What was it?
It was, like, a white creamish color.
Okay. Do you know what the t-shirt said?
No.
Okay. Do you know the colors of the t-shirt?
It was, like, a white creamish and then the logo... was also very light.
Okay, got it. And that t-shirt that she was in bed with, wearing at 5:45, is not in the home. That tells me she's still in the t-shirt.
Yeah, I could not find that in her laundry or anywhere.
Okay, got it. Now, what about her skinny jeans? Are they missing?
You know, I wouldn't even be able to say yes or no because she has so many clothes. She has like 20 pairs of skinny jeans and 50 different shirts. She has a lot of clothes.
Okay. Regarding the skinny jeans, were they black or blue?
The ones that she had worn the night before were light blue.
Light blue. Are those missing, the ones she wore the night before? Are they in the dirty clothes? Where are they? I'm trying to figure out what was she wearing when she disappeared.
I don't know. Because the two confirmed neighbors said that she had the white shirt and gray sweatpants.
Okay, are the gray sweatpants missing?
I don't know.
Okay.
She has so many clothes, I can't even.
Let me ask you this. Her cell phone. The boyfriend that came over said the cell phone, her cell phone, which I'm surprised she left it behind, but that the cell phone was by the bed. When the cops got there, the cell phone was on the island or in the kitchen. Is that part right?
No. The cell phone was in the kitchen the whole time.
Okay, got it. Let me think. Do you know the code to get into her cell phone?
Yes.
Okay, did you go into it to find out who she last texted?
Yes.
Okay, who was she last speaking to and what time?
I don't remember the time, but I was the last person that had called her. Yeah, it was 8:30 the night before because we got home at 9. like 8:30.
So she was in the home at 9 p.m. Friday night.
Correct.
Okay, got it. Joining me also, in addition to Carly Gousset's stepmother, Melissa, is her biological dad, Zachary. Zachary, thank you for being with us. We have got callers trying to nail down what happened and what the timeline is. Tell me what your recollection is, Zachary, of the night Carly, your little girl, goes missing.
The night or the morning of?
Well, what you recall, I assume you went to bed.
Right. Well, I got home just after work. Had a drink a couple beers. Melissa and Carly showed up. Carly was acting paranoid.
Wait. What do you mean by that? Why was she acting paranoid? I want to go to Zachary. What was she doing to seem paranoid to you?
She had admitted to smoking marijuana, and that's the reason why Melissa went to go pick her up early.
What was she doing that was acting paranoid to you?
Scared.
I know, but what did you observe about her that seemed she was paranoid?
She just was acting very nervous and scared about, you know, her phone, about us being around her at moments. And then at other moments, she'd change and just say she loves us and ask us if she was okay. And of course, we said, yeah, you're the...
When you said she was acting nervous and afraid to be around you, what was she doing to make you think that?
I don't know. She smoked pot. I don't know what was wrong with her.
I know, but you're telling me that she told you or told your wife she had had marijuana. All right.
Yeah.
You're saying she's acting paranoid. What was she doing? Was she pacing the floor? Was she biting her fingernails? Was she twitching? Was she crying? Was she anxious? Was she on her phone? Did she call 911? What was she doing to make you tell me that she was acting paranoid? Because I've never seen my children act paranoid, and I don't know what that even looks like for a child. What was she doing?
She was just standing in the corner, afraid of not being safe.
Did she say that?
Yeah, she felt like she wasn't safe.
Oh, okay, well now I'm hearing something after many questions. She said she was afraid. What was she afraid of?
I really wish I knew.
So when she said, "Dad, I'm afraid," you didn't say, "Of what? Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of?"
Yeah, I did. I asked her several times, and she said, "I don't know."
Melissa, what do you recall? What was she saying? I'm trying to figure this out so I can figure out what may have happened to her. What was she afraid of? Because to me, the fact that she's telling you guys she's afraid and then she goes missing can't be separated. That's important, Melissa. What was she saying she was afraid of?
She kept saying, "I don't know." I said, "What are you afraid of? You're home. We're safe." And she said, "I don't know." And I was like, "Well, we're here. You're home. You're safe. It's okay." And then she gets very up and down with being paranoid. And then the next minute she was like, "Fine." It was like a roller coaster with her. And then that's when we said, "Well, maybe it was laced with something, but we don't know because nobody's saying anything and everybody says that it was just marijuana."
Melissa, did you video Carly that evening?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I wanted to show her the next morning how she was acting.
And what does the video show?
It's just a voice clip. It wasn't like a video of anything.
Okay.
Just her talking to me.
What was she saying?
She was saying all sorts of things. She wanted me to spend the night with her. She wanted me to paint her toenails. She wanted to paint my toenails. She wanted to color. She wanted to read the Bible. She wanted to write. There's just so many things.
Okay, that sounds crazy right there. Let me think this through. So where is the video now? Have police seen the video?
No.
Why? Did they not want to see it?
Did you say boys?
Police.
Oh, police. Yeah, I believe they have it because our phones have all been flashed.
I mean, did you show it to them?
Yes.
Good. Let me ask you this. Was the door locked when you guys went to sleep that night?
No. We don't lock our house.
Was there any...
I spent the whole night with Carly in her bed.
Yeah. Did you guys have a dog? Is there any way you would be alerted if there was an intruder?
Yeah, we have a dog. She would have started barking.
And nothing like that happened?
No.
Okay.
I was in her bed laying with her.
Okay, now.
The whole night.
Then at 5:45, what happened? You say you saw her the last time at 5:45 in the morning in bed with her. What happened at 5:45?
Yes. And then I fell back to sleep.
Okay.
And then when I woke back up, it was like 7:15, 7:30, and she was gone.
So the working theory is between 5:45 and 7:30, she disappears. Are any of her shoes missing?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask the obvious next question. What shoes?
No, there's several pairs of her shoes missing now. Oh, the investigators and everything. But she always wears Vans, and her one pair of Vans was missing when they went into her closet. So that's why I believe that she was in her Vans.
Were those missing that morning?
Yeah.
Okay. To Robin Walensky, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, what do you make of it?
Well, I think that the clothing and the shoes is critical because the weather in that area of the country at night is going to be very cold. So did she leave on foot? Did she indeed have those sneakers on? Was she barefoot? Did she wander off? Did someone else come into the house and say, hey, come with me? I think the clothing is absolutely critical. I think that any video from any other homes in the area, the local stores, a 7-Eleven, a gas station, has she been seen? I think security tapes really need to be reviewed. But I think it's critical if someone had on sneakers or they're leaving barefoot or they're in socks. I think that what she was wearing, there needs to be an inventory done of her clothing as to really what she was wearing at the time.
Jessica Morgan joining. So, go ahead, Zachary.
I was just going to ask, how many people in the world won't know the exact amount of what clothes their kids have? Because I have three. Trust me, I just don't know. I wish I did.
Zachary, I can tell you right now that my son is wearing a pair of black laceless tennis shoes, and my daughter is wearing a pair of tan low-cut Converses. I know exactly what shoes and what socks they're wearing, but on the other hand, they're younger, and I laid those clothes out for them, so I know what they have on right now. I'm just wondering, you know, if she, as you were saying, was disoriented the night before. Did she take off her clothes and leave them in the floor? Did she wake up and put those back on? Because right now, we can't even tell people what to look for if she's wandering around because we don't know.
Well, as far as we know, it's tennis shoes, Vans,
a dark pair of sweatpants and a white T-shirt. That's what we know.
And that was confirmed by
three different
people. Two neighbors, and then one.
Okay, now I'm just hearing that for the first time. Tell me about that. What did the three neighbors say?
Okay, so when we first went out searching in the morning, we searched for 2 hours, and one neighbor that lived on our street, he's older, and I asked him, I said, did you see my daughter walking down the street, you know, young girl? And he said, yeah, actually, I did. And I said, do you know what time? And he says, it was about 6:30. And I was like, okay. And then as this the searching and everything keeps going on, we have had three more people. Two are neighbors who live right in this community that saw her wearing a white T-shirt, gray sweatpants, and tennis shoes, walking west on our road. And then the other one confirmed person was a wooder, which is like somebody who goes out to chop wood. He saw her at 7:30 down by Highway 6.
Where in the world do you think she was headed?
I have no idea.
Not a clue.
Does she know? That's the million-dollar question, right? Many people believe she does. Well, let me just start out with what she says right at the beginning, when Nancy Grace is playing her video. And it's the first video, and she says, share the bleep out of it. Now, hearing that really makes you think, if she did something wrong, would she be asking people to spread this story nationwide? Why would she want that attention around her if she knew she did something nefarious? Doesn't make any sense. A lot of stuff doesn't make any sense about this case. Okay, so now in this podcast, she's saying 5:45, and she's saying that she only said that she was wearing skinny jeans because that's what she always wore. Logical. If you think about it, it's pretty damn logical. Also said that last time she saw her, she had on a t-shirt and underwear. Now, considering how she said that Carly's state of mind was described as disoriented, paranoid. She was scared, as you just heard. So much so that she took two audios, one 8 minutes and one over 20 minutes. Wouldn't she think that maybe Carly left the house just like that? You know, you have to think that Carly was now oriented enough to get dressed, right? Be quiet enough not to wake Melissa and run away without her cell phone, without her wallet. Yet, her clothes are missing. Right? So, in this last video, in this last podcast with Nancy Grace and Melissa, we heard that she says no, that the t-shirt that she thought Carly had on was not found. Well, that is now incorrect. Now, the good thing about me looking at this a couple months afterwards is we have more information. And that information is that t-shirt was found in the house. It was found. So, now let's think about this. This interview with Nancy Grace was a couple weeks after Carly was missing. So, they searched for Carly so thoroughly that they know she was nowhere around, right? Yet, she couldn't find the t-shirt. She couldn't find the t-shirt. This stuff, it just doesn't add up. It's you know, you also notice that there's a lot of long pauses for just simple questions. They keep mentioning the confirmed reports, but at the end of the podcast, the woman comes on and says, none of the three confirmed seeing Carly. They only confirm seeing someone fitting that description. That description not matching those clothes that she was in. The same clothes that her boyfriend is now going in groups and saying she was wearing that night, and they were not there the next morning. And he hasn't even gotten his sweatshirts back that she was wearing. Where are those clothes? Who was wearing the gray sweatpants? Who was wearing the white t-shirt? These questions need to be answered. All right, let's get to the cell phone now. The cell phone, was it in the kitchen? Was it in the bedroom? Does it matter? It was tampered with. If it was anywhere... Okay, so if she becomes oriented enough to know to get dressed, be quiet so that Melissa doesn't hear her, you don't think she's going to grab that cell phone? You don't think so? A teenager. Also, no calls since 9 o'clock. She was supposedly, you know, with Carly all night long, playing these games, reading the Bible, blah, 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 blah. But Carly didn't text her boyfriend. So Melissa's texting her boyfriend, but Carly's not. I mean, you know, some things just are not adding up. I'm trying to be as biased as I can and hold off judgment. It's just hard. So I want to know why she was in the phone. And, you know, they have mentioned that the FBI can get back any deleted message. I don't know about that. I feel like there was a reason that she went in that phone. Or that the phone is of such such a big point that she didn't have it when you know pings are being tracked these days. Also, another important point to point out, a couple ones. Number one, the shoes, several pairs missing since investigated. It doesn't make any sense. I thought you knew that Carly's footprints were near the mountains. From the last podcast, we heard that. I'm surprised that Nancy Grace didn't question that. Because she's pretty good. A lot better than Dr. Phil was, at least. So, we hear Zach mention that he had a few beers that night. And originally we heard that he was possibly passed out drunk, which is fine. It's Friday night. It is what it is. But he does appear to be maybe a little bit tipsy in this interview. He does slur a little bit at one point in the next part. With that being said, when they were speaking, you can actually hear Melissa in the background telling him what to say, which is why people, you know, that was one of the biggest points that people raised when this podcast first aired. You know, why is she talking to him in the background, whispering? And then it's almost like she stops whispering, but it was like almost like he was reading from something. It was just really scripted. Okay, scripted is how I would describe it. Also, so what Zach does is he says that she was paranoid, didn't want to be around them, scared to be around them. But they don't mention the 3:30 time frame that Melissa had mentioned recently when giving a timeline of Zach going in and checking on them. I feel like that would be very important a couple weeks after, that he went in there at 3:30 and checked on them, and Carly was there. Okay? Very important. Also, so while Nancy Grace was trying to figure out why Carly was so afraid, Melissa slips in that maybe the weed was laced. Recently, the boyfriend said in their group, Melissa, you know the weed was not laced. Another point that, you know, it wouldn't have been such a big deal. It wasn't a big deal then. Probably most people would just listen to it and just pass by it. But it really stuck with me this time. Okay. Nancy Grace asked Melissa, have the police seen the videos talking about the audio? Melissa says, no. Nancy says, why not? Melissa says, did you say the boys? The boys. So now, let's put that in context. On the Dr. Phil episode, a big point of contention was, when were the kids dropped off? 5:30 a.m. Carly went missing. So it's impossible for the kids to have been dropped off at 5:30 a.m. now. But originally, that's what was said. And that's what was said on Dr. Phil. Melissa is saying that she last saw Carly at 5:45 in this podcast. When something is on your mind, you're thinking about it a lot more. Why would Nancy Grace ask Melissa if the boys saw the audio? What would the boy, like, why would that matter? They're young boys. You know, she even says in the first video, if your kids are around, cover their ears or make sure your kids aren't around or whatever. Yet, she would think Nancy Grace would ask her if her two little boys heard the audio. I think that might have been a little bit of a guilty conscience. I might be overanalyzing that, but, you know, when people are lying, things are usually weighing on them. You can tell she was almost caught off guard right there. I'm going to play it again for you guys. Let me know what you think.
Voice clip. It wasn't like a video of anything.
Okay.
Just her talking to me.
What was she saying?
She was saying all sorts of things. She wanted me to spend the night with her. She wanted me to paint her toenails. She wanted to paint my toenails. She wanted to color. She wanted to read the Bible. She wanted to write. There's just so many things.
Okay, that sounds crazy right there. Let me think this through. So where is the video now? Have police seen the video?
No.
Why? Did they not want to see it?
Did you say boys?
Police.
Oh, police. Yeah, I believe they have it because our phones have all been flashed.
Also, there's something I want to point out that I didn't point out. Originally, it was said that Zach had told Lindsay that Melissa went out searching, or even it was might have been Melissa that told Lindsay that Melissa went out searching for Carly before she even woke up Zach. That is not mentioned in this timeline. Right now, where Melissa explains to Nancy what happens, she just says that they go out and search for a few hours. What else do I have here? I just don't understand why Melissa would think that Nancy asked if the little boys heard the video or saw the video, or why she would even be asking about the boys. So, you know, the footprint thing really bothers me. You know, they don't even know if what shoes she had on, if she had shoes on. But at the end, Zach does raise a good point by saying, you know, he's got three kids, and, well, he really has four, but, I was just thinking about that. What about he's got four. He has Kane, Carly, and the two little ones. That's kind of important, too. Well, anyways, he says that, you know, how many people would know how much clothes, you know, a child has. And at 16, I know that I had a lot of clothing, and my parents didn't know every article of clothing I had. So I don't really fault them for that. But they should know if the shirt she had on the night before was in the house. And it was. And this was about 2 weeks after Carly went missing. And you hear her say no. That is kind of mind-boggling too. How much did they search for Carly if they can't find her t-shirt? I don't know. I mean, let's listen to the second part, guys.
Is Carly. Help us bring her home. Tip line 760-932-7549. Let me ask to Robin Walensky. I'm hearing that police have not been able to confirm those neighbors saw Carly. What do you know about that, Robin?
Yeah, I think it's still being looked into. I think that everyone on the block is going to be interviewed in depth. And they're going to, you know...
When are they going to confirm it?
That's a great question. I will tell you this, though, that you know this, Nancy, that people have very selective memories. They've done studies. You know, you put somebody in a room and someone's wearing a black shirt, you know, in red pants or white sneakers, and they commit a crime and they say, hey, what do you remember about that guy? And then, you know, especially if the person is older, people remember things very differently. So they're going to have to take those neighbors and interview them separately and find out, you know, what's up and what's down. Did they really see her or not? At 6:30 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday, why are these people outside? How did they see her? I have a lot of questions.
Zach and Melissa are telling us three neighbors saw it. If even one of them are correct, then that was her. Also, the fact that three of them separated in time and space have all three stated, at least to Melissa and Zachary, if not police, that they saw her, one corroborates the other. You see what I mean?
Well, what was her demeanor? The key thing is her demeanor. Was she running around in circles alone, acting crazy? Was she having some sort of breakdown? Was she with the boyfriend? Was she with some stranger? There's a lot of questions here.
She was by herself, and all witnesses have already been questioned and confirmed that, yes, it was her.
Oh, so police have confirmed the sightings, Melissa?
Yes.
Okay, so let me go out to Joseph Scott Morgan, forensics expert. Joe Scott, this investigation is going in so many directions, but if these three witnesses are real, okay, then that's a serious, serious lead. If those three are real, and I know what Robin Walensky is saying, I've had defense attorneys say that in court a million times, and there is a grain of truth to it. There is that eyewitnesses can be wrong, but when you've got three different witnesses out of the neighborhood in three different locations that have not gotten together and cooked up a story, I can't imagine why they would, then that is a credible lead.
Yeah, it is. And plus, if they're marking time along this way, where you have these benchmarks where they're seeing this young girl at various locations that kind of match up. I think my question to the dad is this. You guys live in this very isolated area that's just adjacent to a lot of wilderness. And I'm just curious, Do you guys actually live north of the community of Bishop?
Yes, about 10, 12 miles north of the community of Bishop, yes.
Okay, and then northbound of y'all is just kind of vacant. I mean, there's not a lot around that area. Was she seen headed toward Bishop or away from Bishop with all of these neighbors on this timeline?
There's no clue to that. The clue of her heading down towards Highway 6 was good because then it corroborated with the man who was going wooding in the morning that she was just standing on the side of Highway 6. No idea in which direction she would have gone on Highway 6. If I had to guess, I would say south, back to Bishop because of friends, boyfriend, whatever.
Is that where you said her friends and whatnot, the boyfriend, is that where the school was located that she currently attends? Is it in that area there, or is it some, okay. Alrighty. Well, I was just curious because it's so desolate out in that area. And am I correct in stating that you guys live adjacent to a national forest, or is that an Indian reservation?
We do not live on an Indian reservation. There are Indian reservations in the town of Bishop that is south of us. There is an Indian reservation in the town of Benton, which is north of us.
Okay.
I don't specifically live on an Indian reservation.
I guess what he's trying to ask is the terrain around where she was headed, is it desert? Is it mountainous? Is it populated? What is it?
Well, it's high desert, and in that, we live not far from the Sierra Mountains. My house backs up to the White Mountains. It's desert, the mountains here. It's not.
What can you tell me? Okay, we've established the terrain, Joe Scott. So percolate on that for a moment. I want to ask about a call in of a possible sighting of Carly in Labette, California, at a gas station. What, if anything, do we know about that, Robin Walensky?
Yeah, I am not 100% sure on that. I will tell you, Nancy, that the question that I have to the biological dad and stepmom is really what the state of mind was. And when she was being recorded by her stepmom, what were the exact statements? Was she suicidal? Was she upset with the boyfriend? Was there some other kind of spat going on with another girlfriend? 16-year-old girls fight all the time. Was she suicidal? What was her state of mind?
She wasn't suicidal. She was just very paranoid. She was scared. And then when she wanted to go to bed, she didn't want to leave my side. So I spent the whole night with her.
Guys, we are trying to find Carly Gousset. She's a gorgeous young girl, missing. Tip line 760-932-7549. You were just hearing from the biological father of Carly Gousset. That would be Zachary, and the stepmother, Melissa Gousset. Remember, all three of these parents have been working with police, and they all three say that foul play is involved. What do we really know? Joseph Scott Morgan, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. Joe Scott, what's your take on the evidence?
One of the problems, Nancy, is that the waters are so muddied that you can't accomplish the task that's at hand, and that is finding this girl. That's the most critical thing here, because nobody can get on the same sheet of music. I'm hoping that the trail has not gone cold as far as physical evidence goes, that it hasn't been destroyed, that hopefully we can peg down some answers to try to get her found.
Joining me right now, Robin Walensky, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, where we are on this, bringing you the very latest updates by the hour on CrimeOnline.com. She's also an author of The Beautiful Life, the CSI behind the Casey Anthony trial. Robin Walensky, you and I have seen a lot of investigations. And let me just tell you something, Robin. I can tell you right now, what John, David, and Lucy even had in their snack and what was in their backpack. The whole shebang, right down to their socks. Okay? Maybe I'm crazy and I own it. I own that. But they're all I've got, and I'm going to know everything I can about them, protect them, watch them, the works. I'm not taking away from these parents. Maybe they're doing that in their own way. Plus, their kid is a teen, all right? I imagine it's going to get harder as the years go by. But I want to know, Robin, what you believe the facts really are. What is going on? Because none of this is making sense to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a little bit of a different take on it than your other guests. I think that the biological mother, it sounds to me that she was not there. Clearly, she may have known of dysfunction in the home if her daughter was unhappy with the stepmother. There's no consistency to anything.
And here's another thing, and I'm going to have to go to Dr. Brian on this. When I was talking to Melissa and Zachary, and I don't know if I could detect that or not with the mother, the bio mom, usually parents are like falling over trying to give you all the facts that they possibly can, okay? I felt like I was pulling teeth. I felt like it was a kind of a little bit of a confrontation trying to get facts out of the stepmother and the dad. On the other hand, Brian, they may have felt like they've been under attack, all right? So, and they're responding in that way. When anybody's in a corner and they're under attack, they come out defensive, right? So I don't know what the truth of that is, but look, I'm a JD. I'm not a DDS. I don't know how to pull teeth, okay? So I was having a hard time getting facts.
Well, yeah, and that the difficulty that everybody heard you having is the thing that is so curious. I mean, you and I have talked to a lot of parents, sadly, unfortunately, whose kids have actually gone missing due to actual abduction and foul play. They sound desperate to give us every piece of information that could possibly help find their child. They want to take a lie detector to rule themselves out. They want to give an inventory of the clothes. They want to get an accurate timeline. But if we really have witnesses saying they saw the girl outside the house, then it really doesn't matter if she had underwear or jeans or whatever on in the house. She left the house of her own, under her own power, it sounds like to me. That's a runaway.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And it's, again, whenever I have family members of somebody missing, they are beside themselves trying to give you facts. And also, I mean, you know, my model is always Mark Class. I mean, that guy practically laid on the courthouse steps begging for people to take his polygraph, take his DNA, take his fingerprints, whatever, to help. Okay? In this case, maybe they all feel guilty or maybe they all feel attacked in some way. By, you know, media, by everybody. So maybe that explains it all. But I would be in there going through her clothes, trying to find out what's missing, trying to find out where if the shoes are there, so I could get an accurate description of what she's wearing. Also, the cell phone. Joining me right now, in addition to Robin Walensky, Joseph Scott Morgan, and Dr. Brian Russell, is our Crime Online investigative reporter and journalist, Lee Egan. Lee, tell me one thing off the bat is, have those three witness IDs in the neighborhood been confirmed by police?
We did confirm with Sheriff Ingrid Braun with the Mono County Sheriff's Department in California that three different people did indeed say that they saw someone who looked like Carly walking through her neighborhood early morning, October 13th. Now, two of those people live inside the neighborhood, and then the other person lives outside of the neighborhood and said he saw her around a mile away from her neighborhood by a barbed wire fence. Two of the people have never met Carly before, so they wouldn't know who she was if they saw her, but they did give a description of the person that they saw, which matched Carly's description. The other person that has met Carly before said that they could not be 100% sure it was her, but it was somebody that looked like her.
Tip line, 760-932-7549. Hold on, stop everything. We have got breaking news out of a D.C. jury trial, the so-called Manson murderer who...
Okay, so I need to be practical. And if I'm being practical, I need to look at this whole situation practically. And you hear in that last clip, that last section, that the witnesses have corroborated each other's statements pretty much. So two of them have. And so they corroborated each other so much to where she would have been where she was, but not knowing what direction she went in. She was just standing by a fence. You know, I believe that the standing by the fence sighting is not so credible like the first one is. And the first one is being portrayed as, especially in the Dr. Phil episode. What really bothers me is why? Why aren't any of the three witnesses questioned on Dr. Phil? You know, they make it a point to continuously mention in the Nancy Grace podcast that these are confirmed sightings, which they are confirmed. But you hear at the end, they are confirmed to the point of meeting the description, but not Carly. None of them could completely say it was Carly. So, you know, you have to think, is this a huge cover-up? You know how many people would have to be covering up, though? Right? You'd have to have the sheriff in on it. You'd have to have the neighbors in on it. You have to have Zach, Melissa, their family. Like, it's just, I feel like it's just so many people. I'm trying to think rationally and practical. But you also have to think rationally and practical for all the inconsistencies and questions. You know, the terrain there is very rocky, very described as high desert near, you know, the house meets up at the bottom of the mountains, but it's desert. The terrain is not forgiving, to say the least. You know, a walk at 6:30 in the morning is more like a hike. Disoriented and paranoid. You know, I feel like if you got to go look at that area, okay? Focus on that area. It's a very small section of 40 houses. And then it's just mountains and desert. If you saw a girl out there at 6:30 in the morning, you wouldn't go up to them, especially the person who, the witness who saw her was a former cop, law enforcement agent for either the sheriff or the local PD. I'm not sure, I forget which one it was. All of the professionals on Nancy Grace's podcast suspect foul play. And one of them even says he hopes that the physical evidence hasn't been destroyed already. And we know that physical evidence, if it was there, will never be found. Because of law enforcement from day one, dropped the ball, didn't treat it as a crime scene, still will not investigate thoroughly. Nancy Grace mentions that it's like pulling teeth, trying to get facts from the Goussets, but also says that, you know, they have been under attack. So she doesn't really know if that's why it's like that. But it was the same way on Dr. Phil. You know, it's difficult to really get a grasp of this whole situation and come to a rational conclusion. Because it's just a very rare occurrence that happened here. Right? How often does a teen have a reaction like this to marijuana? Well, it's more often than you would think, but not very often. I've seen it happen. I've also experienced a type of psychosis from marijuana before. And it is scary. It is very scary. And I know what Carly was thinking. And you are not in your right mind. And yeah, you might flee. But you're not going to flee in the morning. You're going to flee during it. So if we believe Melissa's situation, Carly was asleep and woke back up and fled. That's not very likely. And this is coming from someone who has been in her shoes and witnessed another person in her shoes that only experienced it for a few hours. Not nine. It's a difficult situation, but it's being made even more difficult by what's going on social media, in the community, the non-investigation by law enforcement saying that it's still a runaway. I will dig deeper into the social media aspect in the next episode. Unfortunately, I was knee deep in it. I will explain how it started, why it started. I will not go into where it is at now. I will only discuss up to where I saw the light, so to say. So, on that note, I'll leave you guys with one last sneak peek into next week's episode that you do not want to miss. And I hope that this episode was a little bit better than the last two. This is the first podcast I've ever made. I'm working on another podcast with a colleague called What's Happened, which looks at cases like Chris Watts's that didn't get the media attention. And we have a podcast part two coming out today with an interview with Amanda K. Jones's mother and father. You don't want to miss that either, because her case is so similar to Kelsey Barrett's. It's crazy. Right down to the brother in law enforcement and the prominent family farmers. It's crazy. It is crazy. But another case with law enforcement that is just terrible. And every time I come into a case where it is bad law enforcement, it's a sheriff's office of a small community that employs the good old boy system, which I just recently learned about. And I wish I hadn't. So let me know what you guys think. Did I raise any new points that you didn't see before? Which way are you going on this? Do you think the parents are guilty? Do you think she fled? Do you think she fled and was met with foul play? Because, Zach did mention in the Dr. Phil that, the stars would have had to align perfectly for that to happen. But it is a possibility. It happens. Let me know what you think. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe.
Yeah, that's that Mormon group, the Operation Underground Railroad.